Now we're holding on page 66 in Bava Metzia, Ois Lamed Ches. We learned before Hanukkah, we had been talking about some things in connection with learning Torah. We talked about the importance of teaching somebody else's child Torah, especially we had examples where Rebbe brought back people who were off the derech. We had a thing about if you have three generations in succession of Talmid Chachamim, then the family will be, then the family is a hospitable place for Torah in the future. And we had Reb Yosef and Reb Zera's fasts on the subject of various aspects of learning. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Amar Reb Yehuda Amar Rav. My dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the Pasuk, the Pasuk is talking about the Churban, and we read it in after of Tisha B'Av morning. Mi ha'isha chacham v'yaben es zois, who is the wise man who could understand the following? Vashe dibra pi Hashem elav, and who is there that has the mouth of Hashem has spoken to him via Gidah, and he should be able to tell it. Alma of the Haaretz, for what is it that the land that Eretz Yisrael was lost and destroyed? So in other words, the Pasuk is asking what was the underlying cause of the Churban. So the Gemara says, Dovaza Omru Chachamim v'lo Pirshuhu. The Chachamim said this, but they couldn't explain it. They were asking the Chachamim, so thus the Pasuk is Miha Isha Chacham, who was the wise man, and none of them could answer it. Omru Nevi'im v'lo Pirshuhu. They asked the Nevi'im, and they couldn't explain it either, as the Pasuk continues. Asher Dibra Pi Hashem Elov, the ones to whom Hashem's mouth has spoken, via Gida, and they can't say it either. So what was the underlying cause? None of them knew. Until Hashem himself explained it. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Vayomen Hashem, Al Ozva Mesterosi Asher Nasati Lefnehem, because they abandoned my Torah that I placed before them. Now, it obviously can't mean they abandoned the Torah as in they're not learning Torah and they're not doing mitzvahs at all. Then it doesn't take, then the Chachamim and the Nevi'im, it would be fairly obvious, and the Chachamim and the Nevi'im would quite well be able to answer that. So they most certainly were learning Torah, and they were doing mitzvahs. But Hashem says that they abandoned my Torah, shenasati lifnehem. And what does that mean? Again, it can't mean they abandoned the Torah as in they're not learning it, because then that would have been fairly obvious. Means Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav Shlei Berchu baTorah Tchila. They did not make a bracha before they learned Torah. So shenasati lifnehem, Rashi points out, the diuk is before. We learn Torah, we say, Asher Nosa Manu Torah Semes, Asher Bocha Banu Mikol Ha'amim, so Asher Nosati Lifnehem, so Hashem is saying that I gave them the Torah, and they should say a bracha before it. The Gemara explains, by the way, in brachas, most brachas that we're familiar with are Dirabanan. The only ones that are Daraisa are Dirkas HaMozin after eating, and Dirkas HaTorah before learning. And then, based on that, the Chachamim established brachas before eating and after learning, and so on and so forth. But so now, when they're not making the bracha, then that shows, Rashi says, that they don't consider it an important gift. They don't consider it something worthy of thanking Hashem and making a bracha for. So that is something not so obvious. So this is why the Chachamim and the Nevi'im couldn't figure it out. It took Hashem to be able to say this is what was going on. They were learning Torah, they were doing mitzvahs, but they weren't doing it with the motivation that this is a precious gift from Hashem, and therefore they weren't doing it l'shma. The Ran, this Gemara is also in Nedarim, and the Mefoshim in the relevant Gemara in Nedarim have a variety of other explanations along those lines. The Ran brings over there from Rabbeinu Yonah that says that exactly that they weren't learning Torah Lishma, and therefore the Lo Chuba, the Pasuk continues, they weren't going in it, they weren't going in the Torah Lishma, and therefore things started going from bad to worse. So in other words, we do find, you know, we find in Pesukim, for example, there were people worshipping Avodah Zarah, there were people doing various Averis, but what was the underlying cause, nobody knew until Hashem said this. And there's a lot of different points about this, Shaloi Berchu Batorah Tchila, what is so bad about learning Torah without making a bracha on it first. There's the idea that then it means that they're just treating the Torah as just a science or something like that, as just something interesting, and then we're just finishing Hanukkah now, and that was exactly what the Yevonim were trying to do. Lashkicham Torah Secha, or La'avir Mechukar Tzenecha, go ahead, learn Torah, do mitzvahs, but don't do it as the Rotzen of the Eved Shteh. So on one level, this is what this is another meaning of what it means over here. Shalei beruchu b'torah tchila. They're not looking at it as the rotzen of Eidish. They're looking at it as an interesting and then logical and rational and scientific and so on and so forth way of doing things, but not as Hashem's Torah.
You said brachos in the morning. That includes the Al-Divrei
Torah. Yeah, one of the brachos we say in the morning, Al-Divrei Torah. Yeah. The Rashi focuses over here on the bracha Asher Nosam Lanu Toras Emes, and then there's a footnote over here that says maybe it should be Asher Bracha Bana Mikol Amim, because that's the one that we say in the morning. Whatever the case, the point is there's a bracha before we learn Torah that where we acknowledge that it's Hashem's Torah and that Hashem granted it to us. The Bach also in the Halachas of Birkas Hashachar in the Torah, the Bach makes a point that the idea of it is also when you make a bracha on the Torah, thereby you're connecting yourself with the Nosan HaTorah, and you're making it that now you're learning that you're exactly that. You're connecting yourself with the Eidush to the Nosan HaTorah. So they weren't making the bracha, meaning that they weren't making that connection.
They weren't
mechaven, or they weren't even making the bracha at all. There's an interesting word from the Tzemach Tzedek also that says, you know, you have a halacha. Anything you eat and drink, you have to make a bracha before. Again, the Midrabanan. There's one exception to that, namely if you drink water, not because you're thirsty, but because, for example, something that got stuck in your throat or you need to swallow a pill or what have you. The halacha is you don't make a bracha on water then because water has no taste. So mainly you're drinking water because you're thirsty, then you're drinking it for itself, but otherwise not. So now, says the Tzemach Tzedek, in a similar vein, when we're saying Shalot Berucho B'Torah Tzchila, they took the view the Torah has no tang. There's no excitement. There's no anything in learning Torah. You know, we got to do it. Fine. But they didn't consider it. They treated it like water. Now, there's a point in which Torah is like water. We have the whole concept of Kabbalah's oil. They were lacking that also. But in other words, when you look at it from the point of view of that water has no taste, they were also taking the view that Torah has no taste. It has no interest for them. And they're just going through the motions. And that's another meaning of Shalei Berucho B'Torah Tchila. So all of this, again, these are all subtle things deep inside a person's mind, which even the Chachamim and the Nevi'im could not figure it out, and the Eidishter himself has to tell us. Okay. More on the topic of Talmud Chachamim and of learning Torah. The Gemara says, Amar of Nachman, or of Choma, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a posik, belev novin tanuach chachma, in the heart of the understanding person, wisdom rests. So in other words, like it rests there calmly and quietly. Over kerev ksilim, but among fools, kivoda, it becomes known. So what does that mean? In what sense is chokhmah known among the ksilim, among the fools? On the face of it, they don't have chokhmah. So belev novin tanuach chokhmah zet tamad chokham ben tamad chokham. This refers to when you have a tamad chokham whose father was also a tamad chokham. So like it's an expected thing that the son is a tamad chokham, and therefore it doesn't make such a stir, it doesn't make such a noise, and it doesn't become so well known, so to speak. Over kerev ksilim tivoda, when the pasuk continues, among fools it becomes known, means that tamad chacham ben ama oretz. This refers to when you have a tamad chacham whose father was an ama oretz. So now, bekerev ksilim means among a family of ksilim, of fools, because they were fools, because they didn't take the time to learn Torah, he becomes known, it becomes well known that he's a tamad chacham, like he calls attention to himself. Merdia Lakol, Mispara the Kisra, Rashi says, he informs everybody and he prides himself on the crown of it. Now, not maybe in a gaivadika way, but just in the fact that it becomes known what background it's not taken for granted, and therefore it becomes well known. It's such an unusual thing that therefore it calls attention to itself. Omar Ula, Hainu de Amri Inchi, Ula says, this is like the expression people say, istira belagina, a coin, and istira is a small coin, belagina in a bottle, kish carrier. It knocks around and it makes a noise. It makes a lot of noise. Kish kish is like onomatopoeic. It means, in other words, like a, it makes a sound. We're knocking around in there, kish kish, banging around. In other words, if it was full of coins, then it wouldn't make any noise. But because you have only one coin in there, therefore it knocks around and it makes a big rattling sound. In the same way, if he was from a family of Talmid Chachamim, then it's like a bottle full of coins. See, so any individual coin doesn't make much of a noise. But now when you have one coin in the bottle, then it makes a big splash. Tosfos gives a different explanation as well, not focusing so much on how many coins are in the container, but b'chlal, who puts coins in bottles? So if a coin was in a purse, for example, then it wouldn't make much of a noise. But when it's in a bottle, where it's not the expected place for it, then it bangs around and makes a big rattling noise. And in the same way, when a Talmud Chacham is in a family of Amei Oretz, which is like an empty bottle, then it really calls attention to himself. Further in this topic, talking about the importance of learning Torah, Reb Yirmiyah says to Reb Zera, "My dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the pasuk, Kotten v'godel shamhu, this great and the small are there." The Eved Chofshi Me Adonav, and the slave is free from his master. In context, the pasuk is talking about Eov is complaining after he had all his tzaras. Eov is complaining, why did I have to be born? Why couldn't I have been stillborn or died young or whatever, and I'd be in the grave where everybody is equal over there. Kot and the Gadol Shamhu, both the great and the small, both the small and the great, are there equally in the grave, and the slave is free from his master. But the Gemara is looking, Rabbi Yumi is looking for a deeper meaning of that pasuk. Yes, otu lo yodinin to cotton the god or shamhu. If we're talking about the grave, or even if we're talking about the olam ha'emes, don't we know that both the small and the great are there? So what is Eov informing us? Ella, so it means the pashtus. It means Reb Zera answered Reb Yirmiyah. Kol ha'makdin atzmei al divrei Torah ba'olam hazeh. Anyone who makes himself small regarding words of Torah in this world, namely, in other words, for example. So Marsha brings an example that David, throughout his life, both when he was a commoner and later on when he became king, he always humbled himself before those who were greater than him in Torah, and he would bend over in front of them, and he would and then crouch and then be willing to listen to everything they say and so forth. So he makes himself small. He makes himself small and humble over Divrei Torah in this world. Nasa Gadol Olam Haba. Then he will be. In the course of that, he will become great in Olam Haba. So that's Kotan, V'Gadol Shamhu. If he's Kotan in this world, then V'Gadol Shamhu, then he's great over there in the Olam Ha'emes. He's Makdin himself. Reb Zera himself, by the way, we learned previously, the name Zera comes from the word Zera, which means small. He was a physically short person, and we know from various places in Shas, he was also extremely humble and was willing to learn Torah from anybody who he could. So that's an example. So he says what he's saying applies to himself as well. Marsha points out, earlier in the Masechta we talked about that David's various enemies would always make fun of him and harass him over the whole story with Uriah and Bathsheba and claim that he had been mizana with an HSH and so forth. And David, but they would claim, therefore, that he doesn't even deserve a place in Gan Eden. Meanwhile, what actually happens is, because he was Makt in Atzma al-Divrei Torah, then he becomes great in Olam Haba. Not only he has a place in Gan Eden, that goes without saying, but he becomes the greatest one, as we know from the Marsha refers to the Gemara at the end of Pesachim, that talks about where after the Sudas Levyosan, there's going to be somebody needs to lead benching, and it's going to go around. They're going to ask Avraham Avinu, and he says, I can't, because Yishmael came from me, Yitzchak, Esav came from me, Yaakov, I married two sisters, v'chola v'chola, and goes from one person to another, until it lands on David. And David says, "Ani avorech v'li noel avorech. I will lead benching, and it's appropriate that I should be the one," as he says in Tillim and in Hallel that we just said today. Kos yishur sasa over shem Hashem ekra. So we see that David,
even though he had the trouble with Bathsheba,
so he, they accused him that he doesn't deserve a place in Gan Eden, and in fact he becomes Godo, he becomes the greatest of, he did Oshem Shemayim, and she was technically divorced, and so on and so forth. Yeah, you have the whole point about that, but therefore he was mocked in Atma, al-Divrei Torah. He made himself small and humble, and bent over in order to learn Torah, and therefore he becomes the greatest in Olam Haba. What about the second half of the pasuk from Eov? The Eved Chofshi Me Adonav means in a similar vein. A person who makes himself like a slave to Torah in this world, he'll do anything, just like a slave will do any job that his master gives him. The same way, the person will learn whatever part of Torah needs to be learned and work on it and harav on it. Nasa Chofshi LaOlam Haba, then he becomes free in Olam Haba. But he has a great place in Olam Haba, and he's free to go to higher and higher levels in Ruchnius. Marsha says here with Moshe Rabbeinu, we have a similar thing. Moshe Rabbeinu also, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, that people were choshed him on Eshes Ish. like this, you had, there would be women would come sometimes to Moshe's tent to ask shilas or whatever it was, and some of their husbands, some of the like sonim shabader, would start their tongues wagging that there must be something going on, and also the fact that Moshe separated from his wife, and how could any yulud isha live for so many years without a wife? V'chola. So yeah, the like sonim shabader were doing that kind of thing. So again, but Moshe was the Eved Hashem in this world, Moshe Avdi, and therefore he's called Natsa Chofshi Me'adonav, in the sense that he was even free from the effect of the Malach HaMavis, that his neshama was taken directly by the Eved, and he didn't have to go through what most people do with the Malach HaMavis. So therefore, both halves of the pasuk, in other words, are referring to people who were unjustly suspected of being involved with an Eishes Ish, and each one of them becomes great in their own sphere. David HaMelech in leading benching, and Moshe Rabbeinu in even being free from the Malach HaMavis. Why should we bring Yosef? What is he doing? I mean, he was an Eved and he became Chofshi, fine, but we're talking about in the Olam HaEmes. We're talking about, we want to have an example where somebody was Kotan in this world and Gadol in the next world, and Eved in this world and Chofshi in the next world. Yosef was Zoicha to be Chofshi in this world as well. So it's a different thing. Okay. The Gemara continues. Rish Lakish had Mitzayin Ma'auta Drabanan. Rish Lakish one time was going around and marking the caves in which Chachamim were buried. We know all over Eretz Yisrael, in particular in the Golo, we have many places, the Arizal re-identified, where various tzaddikim are buried. Now the problem is, in Rish Lakish's times, first of all, you have, even nowadays, Koyanim have to be careful not to become Tomei, and in those times, you actually had even more so, because it was still refined in places in the Gemara, that it seems they still had Parah Adoma ashes, in the way people who were able to become Tahar and actually eat Truma, and actually eat Truma. So you had people who have to be careful not to become Tomei, in particular Koyanim. Rish Lakish did not want that people are inadvertently, that Koyanim are inadvertently going to go over the graves of Tzadikim and become Tomei, and the result is then it would be like kind of the tzaddik's fault that somebody became Tomei from his grave. So Rish Lakish would go around and mark them, so this way Koyanim would know to stay away. Well, we find them in the Gemara discusses in Moed Katan, there is a din in general that you're supposed to mark graves, you mark them with plaster, and that way people see the plaster and they know to stay away, but in particular Rish Lakish is going and doing this specifically to the graves of Tzadik. What? Yeah. So that is how identified many graves of Tzadikim. I don't think it says he marked them. So the Arizal identified them. I don't know if he marked them specifically, but here Rish Lakish is marking them. Well, Kimotel Ma'arte did Abchia, when Rish Lakish came to the cave where Abchia is buried, the Alma Mine, it was hidden from him and he couldn't find it. Chal Shadayte, he felt bad. Omar, he says, Rabbeinu Shalom, lo pil palti Torah kamosa. Well, did I not do pilpul in Torah to deeply analyze and derive halachas in Torah kamosa, just like Rav Chiya did in his times? Why am I not of the caliber to be able to see his caver? And we find, and the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, for example, that Rish Lakish was oikir horim v'toichin and zuba zuba svara. Metaphorically, he's picking up mountains and grinding them one another with his sharp svaras and coming up with many new concepts in halacha. So he's saying, I did the Rav Chiya did this, but I did this also. So why am I not zoicha to see his grave? Yotza Basko v'omra loy, so Basko came out and announced to him, Torah kamosa pilpalta. Yes, you were mefalful in Torah as much as he did. You deeply analyzed Torah to come up with new concepts, just like him. Torah kamosa lodi batsa. But you did not spread knowledge of Torah to others the way Rav Chiya did, as the Gemara now is going to go and tell the story. He wasn't Marvitz Torah. So Ion Yaakov says, therefore, midah k'neged midah. So now, when it says, alma minei, that implies at one point he knew where this grave was, but now he was made to forget it. That's midah k'neged midah. He didn't make sure to prevent the Torah from being forgotten from among the Jewish people, as Rav Chiya did, as we're going to say now. Therefore, Rish Lakish himself was made to forget where Rav Chiya's grave is. And how do we see that? When Rav Chanina and Rav Chiya would be arguing which one's derech in Avodas Hashem is better, is greater. Well, first, if they were arguing, let's say, in Torah or something, if they were arguing a point in Torah. So Rav Chanina would say to the Pia, but how did you decommence this? How are you arguing with me? You want to know how much, you want to know how great my derech in Torah is? You should know, if chas v'shalom, the Jewish people were to forget the Torah, I would be able to restore it, I would be able to reconstruct it from my pilpul. Rav Chanina is also such a sharp a person who's able to accomplish so much with pilpul and be able to derive one thing from another, that if the Torah were to be forgotten, chas v'shalom, he would be able to take the facts that still remain and deduce from them all over again what the Torah says. So therefore he says to Rav Chanina, what are you starting up with me for? I know more than you. Omer Rav Chiya Rav Chanina, but Rav Chiya counters to Rav Chanina, Ba'adei didi kominsis, are you arguing with me? You're saying that you would restore the Torah if it wasn't forgotten. I go one better. The Avila Torah led the Shakach Yisrael. I see to it that the Torah to begin with is not forgotten from the Jewish people. So yours, in other words, Marashah says, your capability is because is b'koyach. You have a potential that would be need, that would be used in case of need. I have the actuality. I have the poil. I do things to see to it that the Torah is never forgotten, such that your pilpul abilities are not needed in the first place. So what is it? My avid. And there's a lot of different points that are made by different mafoshim, that the argument between them is basically what is better for a Talmud Chacham to partifzach in his own learning, or to go and then be married with Torah and go on with Soyim and go on and so on and so forth. Instead of Chia is saying the important thing is a farasta. The important thing is to go and spread knowledge of Torah to the wider world, even if it's at the expense of his own learning. So what does he do? Maya Vigna, what do? Azlina, I go, the Shadina Kitna, I go and plant flax, the Gadulman Nishvi, and I use that flax to weave nets, the Tsayidna Tavi, and with the nets I trap deer. Now what do I do with the meat of the deer? I feed them to Yisoymim. So this way I'm doing tzedakah with that. And then va'avadna over arichna megilta. Then what I do after that is I take the skins of the deer and I make long megillas out of them. V'chasivna chamisha chumshi, and I write the five chumashim. I write the five chumashim on those scrolls. Back then all svarim were written in scroll style. So he writes each chumash on its own individual scroll. The Salikna Lamasa, then Rav Chiya continues, I go to a town, and I find, and that town, a place, there's no Malamde Tinoikus, there's nobody teaching, there's no Malamdim, there's no teachers of the children. Umakrina Chamisha Yenuki Vachamisha Chumshi, so I teach five children, each child I teach him one of the Chumashim. And then what I do is I gather six more children and I teach them the Shisha Sidre Mishnah. Again, one Seder for each one of them. So I've taught 11 kids. Each one I've taught them one part of Torah. And I tell them, by the time that I return, I'm going now to another town to repeat the process. But by the time I come back, each of you teach your Chumash to the other ones. Each of you teach your Seder of Mishnayos to the other ones. So that way, eventually, all of you will know everything. We'll know all of Chumash and we'll know all of the Mishnayos. So I do that. And in this way, I make sure to begin with that the Torah is not forgotten from among the Jewish people. So he's saying to Rav Chanina, what I'm accomplishing by preventing the Torah from being forgotten in the first place is much better than what you're saying. If it were forgotten, then I could restore it. Now, why is he going through all of this process himself? Why does he have to go and plant the flax and make the nets and so on and so forth? Why don't you buy ready-made chumashim and then teach them to the kids? So Marsha makes the point over there, everything needs to be l'shem shamayim. There can't be the slightest trace of anything else, any kavana, not l'shem shamayim. So this way, now, when he's teaching the children, he wants it to be in the best possible way that there shouldn't be a trace of anything else involved in what he's going to be teaching the children. So therefore, he's doing it all himself. And there's a famous vort brought in that connection, there's a famous vort for that they say from the Vilna Gaon, that in the same vein, for example, if there were a shul or a beis medrash, that everything from beginning to end of it, all the money that was used to buy it, and all the tools that were used to make it, and so on and so on and so forth, was every bit of them made, and they're made or earned or whatever, l'shem shemayim, then you would daven in such a shul, it would be impossible not to have kavanah. So then in the same way, Rav Chiya wants to make sure everything, every single thing that he's doing is purely the Shem Shemayim, and therefore that will have the maximum effect on the children and make it that the learning that they do is going to have the maximum possible effect. There are different mafoshim talk about different other things as well. There is an explanation that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not maybe saying that he actually does all these things. He's saying I would do all these things if it's necessary. If there were no ready-made scrolls, according to one explanation, he's saying if there are many ready-made scrolls, sure, I'll use them. But if there are not, I would go and start from scratch, even going as far as planting the flax and everything else. Just in order to make sure that it gets done, rather than delegating it to somebody else. So you have the famous expression in Chassidus, "Ilu mitzavinu lachtev eitzim," that if the Eibush had commanded us to chop wood, then we would do it, or we should do it, with the same enthusiasm as we do every other mitzvah. So Rav Chiya then is expressing that point also, according to this explanation, that he's saying if I had to go and start to begin with by chopping the wood and doing everything else, I would still do that because that's in order to make sure that the job gets done. And there are mafoshim who talk about also that there's a meaning in it as well, that it means that metaphorically a person might have, for example, a person, let's say, opens up a sefer and everything is there ready in front of him. But he shouldn't banug zich with that. He shouldn't consider that enough. He should be willing to go and put in his own effort to research and to find all of the information in Torah himself, rather than just rely on the malachtim who collected everything for him. In the same way as Rav Chiya is saying, I wouldn't rely on other people who have written svarim. I would go and do it all myself from scratch. In any case, so therefore, so Rav Chiya is saying, so my derech and avoda, then he says to Rav Chanina, is much greater than yours. V'hainu de'omer Rebbe, this is like Rebbe says, kama gdoyle maise Chiya, how great are the deeds of Chiya? How great is what Rav Chiya is accomplishing? That is, we're saying that he's preventing the Torah from being forgotten among the Jewish people in the first place. And in fact, the Gemara in Ksubas actually mentions that the Gemara discusses over there, before Rebbe passed away, he appointed Rav Chanina as the next Rosh Hashiva. Why didn't he appoint Rav Chiya? So the Gemara gives two answers over there. One is that Rav Chiya passed away before Rebbe. But the other answer is, no, Rav Chiya did in fact outlive Rebbe, but based on this, Rebbe is saying, I don't want to interfere. Rav Chiya is going and teaching these children in one village after another. I don't want to, as great as it would be to be the Rosh Hashiva and to be teaching the next generation of great Talmid Chachamim, it's much more important what he's doing, going village by village and doing Mitzrayim over there and teaching the 11 children at a time, and therefore I don't want to take him away from that. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi asks Rebbe, when you're saying that how great are Rav Chiya's deeds, and they're even greater than Rav Chanina's, afilu mimar, are they even greater than your deeds, Rebbe? Omer lahu ein, and he says yes. Because Rebbe himself was a famous Anav. So yeah, Rav Chiya is accomplishing more than I am. He asks, Afilu me'aba, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi asks Rebbe, would you say that Rav Chiya's deeds are greater than those of my father, of Rabbi Yosi? Amalei, but Rebbe says, Chas v'shalom, loy tehei kazois v'Yisrael, such a thing should never be said among the Jewish people, because your father, Rabbi Yosi, is still greater than anybody else. Marshall explains that we find something that Rebbe and Rabbi Yosi have in common. We find, the Gemara mentions in Shabbos, that Rabbi Yosi never looked at his milah. But Rebbe was even more than that. He never put his hand below his waist, below his belt. So Rebbe was actually greater in his precious than Rabbi Yossi. But nevertheless, he can say, I'm Nivusan himself, that your father, that Rabbi Chiya is greater than me. But he can't say about Rabbi Yossi that anybody should be greater than Rabbi Yossi, and therefore Chas v'Shalom, no such a thing should ever be said. We do find, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that Rebbe had tremendous derech eretz and tremendous respect for Rabbi Yossi. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Zeira, Emesh nearly Rav Yosi b'Rav Chanina. Last night I saw Rav Yosi b'Rav Chanina in a dream. Amarti lo, so I asked him, Eitzel mi ata takua? Who are you pitched next to in the Yeshiva Shomayla? So who you have your place in the Yeshiva Shomayla? Who are you next to? Amali Eitzel Rav Yochanan. So he says, I'm next to Rav Yochanan. Rav Yosi b'Rav Chanina was one of Rav Yochanan's Talmidim. But Rav Yochanan Eitzel me, in turn, who was Rav Yochanan next to? So he says, Eitzel Rebbe. Eitzel Rav Yanai. Rav Yochanan is next to Rav Yanai. Again, Rav Yanai was Rav Yochanan's primary Rebbe. But Rav Yanai Eitzel me, and who was Rav Yanai sitting next to? Eitzel Rav Chanina. But Rav Chanina Eitzel me, Eitzel Rav Chiya. Rav Chanina then, in turn, is sitting next to Rav Chiya. So each one is sitting next to someone who's greater than him. Amalei, Amarti Loi, so Rav Zera says, I said to Rav Yosi Rav Chanina in my dream, Rav Yochanan, Eitzel Rav Chiya Loi, does Rav Yochanan not deserve to be directly next to Rav Chiya? Why is he so many places away? In between, you have Rav Yana and Rav Chanina. Amalei, so Rav Yosi Rav Chanina answers me, Va'asar b'skukin denura, in a place where you have sparks of fire, u'ba'urin de'esha, and where you have flaming fire, man ma'ayo barnapcha latamon, who would bring in barnapcha over there? Barnapcha is a nickname for Rav Yochanan. Either because Rashi elsewhere explains two possibilities, either because Rav Yochanan's father was in fact named Napcha, and Napcha means a smith, so it might mean that his father was a smith, or it might mean that his father's name was actually the name Napcha. Rashi, and this is a Rashi in Sanhedrin, the second explanation Rashi says over there, we learned previously in our Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan was extremely handsome, one of the most beautiful, handsome people who ever lived, and therefore we call him Bar Napcha, the son of the blacksmith, like almost like not to bring an Ein Hara on him. In any case, So in other words, it's kind of a play on words over here, Marisho explains. Where would you need a blacksmith when you have a blacksmith blows on the coals and makes them burn? And then you have flashes of fire and sparks of fire. But in a place where you already have those things, then you don't need the Bar Napcha, you don't need the smith over there. So the same way, in other words, he's saying, Rav Chanina is like a smith. Where again, Rav Chanina had just said before that if the Torah were forgotten, I could restore it. So you could imagine the moshul would be then, you have a fire which has died down, and you need somebody to blow on the coals and revive them and bring out a fire again. That would be what Rav Chanina can accomplish. But Rav Chiya doesn't even need that, because Rav Chiya doesn't need that, because there's already flaming fire over there, because we just said Rav Chiya prevents the Torah from being forgotten in the first place, prevents the fire from going out in the first place, therefore, Rav Yochanan, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yana and Rabbi Chanina, doesn't belong over there. So therefore, in short, as great as Rabbi Yochanan is, Rabbi Chiya is so much greater that even Rabbi Yochanan can't approach his caliber. So the Gemara continues in this vein, speaking about Rabbi Chiya. Omer Rabbi Chaviva, Ishtoi li Rabbi Chaviva bar Surmati. Rabbi Chaviva says that Rabbi Chaviva bar Surmati, which is obviously a different Rabbi Chaviva, told me the following story. Chazi li hahu merabonon, da b'shchiach Eliyo gabe. I one time saw a certain Talmud Chacham whom Eliyo Anovi would regularly visit. Safra have a Shapir in Ede. In the morning, he says, when I saw this Talmud Chacham, his eyes looked normal. But in the evening, that evening, Damian kad Mikli and Menura. They looked like they had been burnt in fire. So what happened between the morning and the evening? What happened to his eyes? Va'amile Maihai asked him, what happened? Omali, so the Talmud Chacham tells me, Da'amile Leliyo. What happened was, we just said that Eliyo regularly visited this Talmud Chacham. So I said to Eliyahu, Achvi li Rabbanon, ki salki the Masivta Dirakiya. Show me the Chachamim as they go up in the Masivta Dirakiya. You have the Chachamim are, the Chachamim go up from one level to another in the Masivta Dirakiya, in the Yeshiva Shomayla. We have the Gemara mentions at the end of Brachas, for example, Tamar Chacham in Lahem Menucha, that Tamar Chacham never have any rest because they're constantly going to higher levels. In Kabbalah Dika, in Kabbalah Dika Osius, we talk about that there's an Amud, there's a pillar by which the Neshamas go up from one level, from one Olam to the next. So therefore, so the Chachamim are going up to higher levels in the Masivta Dirakiya. So this Tamar Chacham says to Eliyahu, I want to have a chance to see that. So Eliyahu tells him, B'chulu motzis b'huli istakuli. Fine, you'll be able to look at any of them going up. Levan b'guharka d'rabchia, with the exception of the carriage or the litter of in which they're carrying Rabchia, d'loy t'stakul bay, that you should not look at it. Because he's on such a high level that you shouldn't be looking at him. My simanayu, so the Talmud Chacham asks, how am I going to tell which one is Rav Chiya's conveyance? So he answers, v'chulu azvi malochi kisalki v'nachsi, because with all the rest of them, malochim help them go up and down. Levar mi guharka de Rav Chiya, with the exception of the carriage of Rav Chiya, d'minachshe solik v'nachis, it goes up and down by itself. In other words, the idea is, regular level tzaddikim need the malachim to help them up to higher levels, to higher olamus, to higher levels of alakus. Rav Chiya is so great, he doesn't need the assistance of those malachim. He's able to go up to the higher worlds all on his own. So therefore, so he's on a much higher level. Don't go looking at his carriage. Well, the Talmud Chacham says, "V'le matzoi la'ukmei anafshoi." I couldn't hold myself back. I had to see him. Istakli bay, and I was looking at his carriage also going up. Also, tre butiti denura. All of a sudden, two sparks of fire came out from his conveyance. Umachilahu gabra, and hit that person, meaning me. The Talmud Chacham was telling the story. The saminu la'ene, and blinded his eyes. Lamocher, the next day, Azli Ishtatchi Amaute, the next day I went and prostrated himself and Davin by the cave where Rav Chiya is buried. Amina, and I said, Masnisa de Mar Masnina, the Mishnayas, the Brisas meaning of Rav Chiya, I learn and I teach the Brisas, the Tesefta that you Rav Chiya composed. Rashi brings over here from various Gemaras that the Gemara sometimes mentions Rebbe Loi Shnor, Rav Chiya Minayin Loi. If Rebbe didn't teach something, how would Rav Chiya know it? Because Rav Chiya was Rebbe's faithful Talmud, and he records more details of what Rebbe taught. And also we say, for example, the Gemara mentions in Chulin that a Braisa that was not taught in the Yeshiva of Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia cannot be considered to be a reliable Braisa. So he put together the Tesefta, which is the most reliable collection of Brises that we have, and the Talmud Chacham says, so I said to Rav Chiya, I teach your Brises. And therefore, what does that mean? So Marsha explains, therefore, it means Sifsois of Dovus Vakever. Every time I teach something of yours, Rav Chiya, every time I learn and teach something of yours, your lips move in the grave, meaning you have a tremendous Tainug in the Olam HaSel Yonim. So in the schus of that, please help me. Another explanation is he's telling him, Suma Choshev Kames, a blind person, is considered like he's dead. But I Fakert, I keep you alive in this world by constantly learning your Torah. Therefore, it shouldn't happen that because of you, I end up being Kames, blinded and as if I was dead. So he davens in the schus of that, the itasoi, and sure enough, I was cured. So, Tosfos says, in that case, why did Rav Chaviva Bar Surmaki see him with his eyes looking like they were burnt? First of all, because there was a roshim of it. First of all, because even though he was healed, as he was able to see again, there was still an after effect of it. The other possibility, Tosfos says, is that later on he told him what had happened. That when he saw him that evening, he saw his eyes were burnt, and at that point the guy was actually still blind. Afterwards, he went in Davin and he was cured, but he told him at the time. Marshal, in fact, takes out, when the Gemara over here takes out the word lamocher, because it wasn't the next day, according to that, it would be that he right away went and Davin to be healed. But the point is, so we learned from that, in other words, that you don't look at where Rabchia is because he's on such a high level. He's on such a high level that nobody can see him, as we had before, that Rish Lakish is not even able to see where he's buried. Yom Mashiach Gola, Days Tavis, Zeis Chanukah. So the Hurrah from Chanukah is like this. Every day, just like every day of Chanukah, we do more lamps, more candles in the menorah. The same way, we have to add every day in things that bring the Gola, the Poyel, and the Goli. Among them is to strengthen our emunah and to strengthen our yearning and our expectation for B'yas Mashiach so much that he feels by himself that as long as Mashiach has not actually come b'poil and b'galui, his years, his times are lacking. As we find in this week's parasha, Yaakov says to Paroi, I've lived 130 years, but he says, they were ma'at, they were few. What do you mean, 130 years is not few? It means because Yaakov saying, I was not able to accomplish the Geula B'Poel, and therefore, relative to that, all the years that I've lived are considered few and lacking. So in the same way, then the Rebbe is saying in the Sicha, in Miketz Nundays, that in the same way, Yid has to develop that feeling by himself, that as long as Mashiach has come, his life is lacking. Okay, continuing on Halachos of Hanhogas Hadam Aboker, of when a person gets up and what he does in the morning. So we were talking about saying the sections of so let's see, we were saying we were talking about saying the different sections about the korbanos and which ones you should say at any given time. You have to say them standing, and should he and then now whatever brings that he should say afterwards, he rots, and that it should be considered as if I brought an ola and so forth, but not after chatas and osham, because you don't bring those the neder and adava. So now the Alter Rebbe continues. And Shabbos and Yom Tov don't say these. Now, the Alter Rebbe did not put these Yehiratzins in the Siddur at all. We just have the general Rabbeinu Shel Olam that we say after Abaye Av Masadur, we say a general tefillah over there that it should be considered as though we brought the korbanos. But now on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you don't say these individual Yehiratzins anyway, because you don't bring private people's korbanos on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Parshiyos you can say, because just like reading from the Torah. Nevertheless, if a person is not an Amah Oretz, better that he should be learning that day's Pausha. And again, the Alter Rebbe did not put most of this in the Siddur, only the Pausha of Trumas Hadeshen and the Tomid and the Keturas. Talking about further about saying these various sections of the Korbanos. On Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur and Chol HaMoed Pesach, you don't say the section of the Torah because you don't bring a Torah on those, because you don't bring a Torah on those days because it contains chometz, and because you wouldn't be able to eat it that night. Along with the korbanos, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, you should say the pasuk v'shochat oseh al yerech hamizbeach tzafonah, which we do. We have that in the Siddur. Why? Because the Medrash says that Hashem says, made ani alai shemayim va'oretz. I take the heaven and earth as witnesses. That when people read this pasuk, tzafonah lifnei Hashem, then Hashem says, I remember the akedah of Yitzchak ben Avraham. So in order to evoke the schus of the akedah, then we say that pasuk v'shochat. Then you have Yesh Noyagim to include the parasha of the Kiyo, which the Alter Rebbe didn't put in the Siddur, and then the parasha of Trumas Hadeshen, which we do, and then the parasha of the Tomid, and then the parasha about the at the end of Tzava about the Mizbeach HaZohar, which again we don't have in the Siddur, and then the section of the Ketores, because that was the order of the Avodas in the Beis Hamikdash. Again, the Alter Rebbe left some of those out, and only has in the Trumas Hadeshen, the Tomid, and the Keturas. But that encapsulates within it all of the avodah of the morning. There is, by the way, the Shara Kolel, actually the Rebbe's great grandfather of Avram David Lavut, has a long explanation of why we say Keturas twice in davening before Shachwis and after it. The gist of his explanation is when we say after Shachwis, that's the proper place where it belongs. Because if Tefillah itself, if Shemana Esther corresponds to the Tomid, then after the Tomid you bring the Keturas. The fact that we say it beforehand in Birkas HaShachar is more because Keturas has the power to take away Xeris Sororis and Agaphras, and so on and so forth, and therefore we should say it in the morning as well.
Okay.